Hey guys, we return to a Rick Moranis month, and this time we're touching on the Ed O'Neill Rick Moranis classic Little Giants. Now, this movie's kooky and weird and fun and kid powery, but I tell you what, the charm that works is Mr. Moranis, so we welcome him back to acting very soon. In the meantime, thanks for listening, subscribing, sharing, all those things. We're happy that you guys are around, and for all the kind words we've received about, you know, helping lighten this weird, stressful time's load, we want to throw it back at you and say you being so supportive has been helpful as well. In the meantime, stay mentally healthy, protect yourself when you go outside, and watch this athletic movie, since you can't be seeing any other sports outside, I guess. And thanks. Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood, where this week we are following up our Rick Moranis month and doing the not Mighty Ducks Little Giants movie starring Rick Moranis and Ed O'Neill. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defend Your Childhood, and this week on panel we have...
Lauren.
Matthew Quinn again.
Hello, this is Daniel, and I am currently on the injured list.
So, for those of you who have not seen this, this is the football version of the Big Green, the soccer version of the Mighty Ducks.
Oh, God, your reference to the Big Green, I haven't thought of that movie in years.
And neither should you have, or the sober version of, never mind.
Yeah, sober version, that's out the window.
Isn't the Big Green the one with the goat?
It is the one with the goat.
Yes.
The sober version of the Bad News Bears, that's what I was thinking of.
Okay, yeah, I was about to say, the Bad News Bears was sober, and then I was like, oh, this is the sober version.
Yes.
It took me a while, but I got
Murder
there.
Murder Matthew was drunk the entire time. That movie is a DUI.
Walter Matthau's entire career was a DUI.
I love Walter Matthau because he looked like a 70-year-old when he was 15.
Yep.
But this movie doesn't have Walter Matthau. Rick Moranis plays the nerdy younger brother of Ed O'Neill.
It's Kevin O'Shea and
Dan.
And panty melter Devin Sawa is in this movie. We'll get to him in a little bit. So it's been a while. Lauren, would you like to give us our plot synopsis?
Sure. So there's these two brothers in this town of Urbania. And Kevin is the town hero. He's a Heisman Trophy winner and all that. And he's just kind of the homeboy hero. And Danny's always is his younger brother and always been in his shadow. Kevin wants to coach Pee Wee football team. And Danny's daughter, Becky, whose nickname is Icebox, wants to try out, even though she's a girl. And so she's cut from the team and is really upset. It becomes a whole thing. And Kevin suggests she be a cheerleader instead, and which we'll get into. But anyway, so because Becky's cut and because all these people are cut, Danny decides to make his own Pee Wee football team, kind of these lovable outcasts. And the town decides that there should be a playoff game to decide which team, either Kevin's team or Danny's team, to be the hometown and represent Urbania. So, and the whole thing is the playoff team. And anyway, and it goes from there.
I love how you refer to Ed O'Neill as the hometown boy, because in my case, that's so true.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My great aunt and great uncle grew up. Oh, not grew up. They lived in the house behind his parents' house.
Literally of Ed O'Neill?
Yeah.
No kidding.
His dad was the water commissioner of Youngstown, Ohio.
It's funny because this is like...
Oh, wow.
I don't know if this was filmed in Ohio, but it looked like Ohio. Like, they had craftsman homes everywhere. They did a good job of making it Ohio-esque.
Yeah.
Well, there is an Urbania, Ohio, so...
Is it a real town?
Oh, yeah.
They did a good job of making Urbania seem like it could be any town. Like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any suburbia USA, you know?
So, we need to get into this. It's because, as she kind of alluded to, it's a very simple plot. It's the underdogs versus the better team. You have the Giants versus the Cowboys. And it's the team of lovable losers against the professional, like the big kid team. And again, it could be Mighty Ducks or any of these other 90s kids movies. This one is different because it's the only one that we talked about that wasn't made by Disney. So that's good.
Yeah. Right.
But it had Rick Moranis and Ed O'Neill in it, who...
both are kind of fantastic. I love but this.
At the time, they were both pretty big. I mean, this was right in the height of Married with Children, wasn't it?
94? Yeah. This was
isn't,
huge.
Isn't he essentially the same character as Al Bundy? Because Al Bundy was a whole faded football guy who's selling shoes. He's the faded football guy selling cars.
Well, except, I believe Al Bundy, the whole faded thing was a core part of his character, whereas in this town, everyone treats Kevin O'Shea like he's still a god.
I was going to say, it's funny you bring that up because it's, I almost said Ted Bundy. That's a different guy.
Different podcast.
A little bit.
It's his dream come true, right? Because he won the Heisman. It wasn't the high school game where he got the winning touchdown and then nothing happened, right? It's that masturbatory fantasy of the adult who did the one thing good when he was in high school and then never mattered again, so he became a cop.
Right. And he's trying to live vicariously through his kids.
Right. Here, it's the opposite. It's that, you know, homeboy did good, and then he came back to his hometown to make others better. Because the interesting thing about this is that the gender politics, at first, he is wrong, and then he redeems himself at the end. Mm-hmm. And best we can tell, he treats the football team well. He's not an asshole to these kids. He has to make cuts because that's what coaches have to do. I don't know. Like, it's interesting because the drama happens between the two brothers, not with the kids. And in a lesser movie, this would be about someone who's mistreating kids. And no one is mistreating kids in this movie, which, thank God.
Well, right. He does try to, the whole thing with trying to get Becky to be a cheerleader, I thought he was trying to screw with his brother.
Now,
by depriving him of his best player.
I do.
And so I was live tweeting this. I'm like, he's a piece of shit.
I will say you're wrong, if only because Becky comes up with the idea for cheerleading afterwards.
Now, I do want to challenge you on one point, which is that...
Well, fuck you, too. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Well, maybe later, Nick.
Oh, please.
Take me out to dinner first, but anyway...
Oh, my.
I'm going to challenge you a little bit when you said that the adults aren't abusing the kids in this movie. They're not physically abusive, but they're all using these kids as tools to relive their own glory days, which can lead down some very dangerous paths, especially with Spike's dad. That's insane.
Yeah, the football Nazi. He's a football Nazi.
Well, he's any Little League dad I've ever met. But I will say specifically, he is. I will say Ed O'Neill's character doesn't really do that.
Right.
And in fact, he corrects them the one time they do.
Oh, right, in the third act in the game.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking, though. I'm sorry. You guys being boys or whatever probably didn't care as much. But it really pissed me off, especially when I saw this when I was young, when Icebox got cut. When Becky got cut, because she was clearly good and should have been, and it generally, like, pissed me off.
Now, is Icebox too Freudian a joke for a kid's movie?
That joke is terrible. She should have been, if you want to call her the freezer, if you want to call her the fridge, that's fine. But calling for lack of a better term, a sexless preteen, the Icebox, that's not okay.
No.
Because when they stop calling her
that,
when they stop calling her the Icebox, it's because she's hitting on a boy. Like, that's not and by the way, Devin Sawa,
My God. I feel like I say this all the time, but I had a huge crush on him.
Who is he?
Huge.
Outside of this movie. Who
Casper.
He's Casper. He's the boy in Casper.
Whoa. Are you fucking with me?
This is our second movie
he's
with
Casper.
Oh, God.
Yes, go watch Casper. He was in...
previous episode.
Previous episode, Casper.
What's the one where the girls and their best friends and they grow up? He was...
best friends and they grow up.
Boys Club?
Misery?
Oh, and by the way...
He was in a bunch of stuff in the 90s.
He was in three movies that we will do. He was in SLC Punk. He was in the first Final Destination movie. Here's the list. Yeah.
Idle Hands.
And Idle Hands. He was in Idle Hands.
He was in SLC Punk? Because I've actually seen that movie.
He was Sean in SLC Punk. And he was in the first Final Destination movie, which, again, is a Stay Tuned, and Idle Hands. And those are all about the same time. He was also Stan in the Eminem Stan music video.
Oh, dope.
That took a turn.
And he's up there with, like... For those of you who don't know, Leonardo DiCaprio had a weird rapey crew in the 90s called the Pussy Posse. He's not one of those guys, but he's adjacent to those guys.
He was also in Now and Then.
Oh, there you go.
Now and Then is the movie I was talking about. Yeah. At any rate, all I'll say is the reason why my girls' soccer team went to this movie, well, we saw the Big Green, speaking of the Big Green, We watched that as a bonding activity, and we also saw Little Giants together as an activity. It was purely for Devon Sawa.
So were you a Sawa or a Jonathan Taylor Thomas girl?
Oh, JTT all the way. JTT, no question.
I will say I miss that haircut. The part in the middle bowl cut.
I hope he's doing well.
It's kind of JTT, like the haircut I'm currently rocking, isn't it?
It is, but I'll tell you what I respect about yours. You have your hair color. These were boys who bleached them tips, girl. Now, as a blonde woman yourself, like, that was the thing, right?
The beach blonde.
It was like a beach boy blonde, too. It was like, it was irradiated, right, of opposite Tim Allen. I do remember that JTT thing.
Yeah, JTT, hope you're doing well. Mm. Give me a call.
All right, girl.
I'm sure if you offer him $5, he would. Oh,
my God. What's that horrible website where your celebrity will give you, like, a personalized message?
Oh, yeah. Cameo is the website.
So we'll use Patreon money, for those of you who donate, to get our friend Lauren here a personalized cameo call.
Oh, my God.
From
I
Devon
love you guys
Sawa.
Forever. Oh, boy. Be amazing.
I don't know. I think eventually Scott would put a stop to it.
I think he's Canadian, too. I think I just have a thing for Canadians. Keanu Reeves. Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Gosling, too.
Devon Sawa. Canadian. They're all Canadian, yeah.
What did you think of Rick Moranis then?
He's Canadian?
Oh, yeah.
You just blew my mind. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Rick Moranis is cool, but he's definitely not a sex symbol.
She wasn't.
Well, not to you.
Well, she wasn't.
Maybe to you.
She wasn't into nerdy guys. Trust me, I knew her in high school.
Well, here's something about this movie. Now that we've gone through Lauren's crush history.
Oh, yeah. You're fine. Please. I was in love with Pamela Anderson in the 90s because I was a dude in the 90s. There,
she's
you happy?
Hot.
I mean, I hope we're going to do Bring It On at some point, because Bring It On was a very important movie to 13-year-old Danny. But
I'm
anyway,
sure he was.
Let's do it.
I'm sure it was.
Pam just got divorced. You've got a chance.
I'm married.
She just got divorced for the fourth time.
Tragically, I'm taken.
Didn't she just get remarried to John Peters?
They divorced after 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
John Peters, you know, the farmer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways. Farmers only?
Farmers only. Little Giants, sorry.
Anyway, the thing that is weird about this movie in retrospect is that most of these sports movies, like you said, Big Green, we did The Sandlot as a previous episode, they're focused on the kids and how the kids relate to each other, which is perfect. This one, it's more focused on the rivalry between the brothers and all the adults in the community. That does some weird things to the plot.
Like, at one point, he calls the cops on his brother.
Pretending that they're perverts.
Yeah, pretending right. that they're jerking off to peewee football practice.
I will ask you, though, you're critiquing a movie for its plotting, which is fine. I will say it's interesting to me, I'd say positive to me, that they're putting it in the hands of the better actors. Right? Like, Ed O'Neill and Rick Moranis hold down a movie.
They do, but I mean, yes, they're much better actors than the kid actors, but I mean, that's just the nature of being a kid actor. The thing about it is, thematically, it would have made a lot more sense if it was more focused on the kids, right? Because focusing on the O'Shea brothers, the more I think about it, the more inappropriate I think that was for what this movie was trying to say.
Well, if you took out all the jokes, because this movie actually had a lot of laugh-out-loud moments, I found, is you get a lot of psychodrama about a younger brother who resents an older brother, a single father whose wife abandoned him, who raised a daughter by himself, and so much really dark places. But this movie was hilarious.
So what you're pitching is Blue Chips with kids. So we need Nick Nolte yelling at a bunch of children.
No, this is a Todd...
God damn it!
This is a Todd Solondz suburbia movie.
So who has AIDS in this movie?
That would be Ed O'Neill, obviously.
Well, do you think they were trying to get away from being Mighty Ducks-ish?
Yes.
Like, trying, you know?
Oh, my
trying
God.
To be their own
the
thing.
The Kramer versus Kramer that is Emilio Estevez's character.
Right.
He's losing the kids. He's losing the family because of his Dewey, like...
Now, I mentioned this off mic to Lauren, but there's this documentary that was on Netflix called Trophy Kids.
Right.
Has anyone seen it?
No. I have not.
No, but after talking to you, I want to.
It's essentially about these four families, and each one of them, the parents are trying to build up their kids to be sports superstars, right? So there's this dad who's spending hundreds of thousands of dollars that he doesn't really have to make his daughter the best golfer that he can imagine. The thing about it is there's such a darkness in the parents treating the kids like this because they don't see their kids as kids. They see them as an investment. And there's some moments in that movie that are just really upsetting. Like, I think I even told you, Lauren, one of the dads whose son is a high school football star, at one point in time, he mentions casually, like, he doesn't want to keep doing football. And his dad literally tells him, well, if football doesn't work out, you may as well kill yourself.
Yeah, but that's more of the dad in the last movie we did, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Well, I mean, it doesn't get as extreme in this movie, but I kept thinking about that when I, you know, saw these two grown-ups trying to live vicariously through these kids and putting all of their stock in how good these peewee football teams
were. You see that with Spike's dad, because Russ in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is, you know, flawed, but he's not, like, beating his kid. Spike's dad turned into a monster. He talks himself in third person and hates women.
Well, yes.
Spike don't play with girls. Spike don't like that.
Spike can't speak in a sentence. And that's the point they're making, that these parents are bad, right? And I will stop this specifically because Matt and my brothers played on a traveling baseball team in which three of those kids ended up playing in the major leagues. And one of those three ended up playing basketball instead because he's just a teenage athlete, and that's how these kids are. You can look him up, Jody Meeks. He's a good kid. I've re-met him a couple times. And this is not a story about Matt and I, so I won't tell our part in this, which is we were the loser. We're the nerds sitting on the sideline of real athletes. But I knew these parents, and frankly, Ed O'Neill is the best coach they could have had because the problem is most of these coaches are complete assholes, and Ed O'Neill is not.
Right.
In fact, he corrects these parents who are assholes. And the thing is, these regional teams are this bad. In 20 years, this movie's not going to work because football's going to be dead. I'm sorry, guys. Football's going down for this reason.
Movie kind of also reminded me of was that whole bullshit that everybody keeps saying about participation trophies. Like, all kids deserve a chance, which, yeah, they deserve to be supported, but I don't know. I just imagined somebody watching Rick Moranis going, you're spoiling these children.
Well, okay, so first, if you don't want to kill yourself but want to get Daniel's point, there's a documentary that I saw called Make Believe. And if you haven't seen Make Believe, it's exactly what Daniel's talking about, but involves kids competing in a magic competition.
Oh, that's much better.
But it's the same idea. There's parents who are like, you need to be a better actor. And there's these rabbits that keep dying in tricks. And these kids are breaking up because they can't do the stupid trick.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the same idea, but it's just stupid. But, by the way, adults are assholes too. Watch The King of Kong. Because it's the same thing, but with nerds playing video games, and they're just assholes.
Hey, Nick, there's a kill screen coming up in the other room.
We're competing as podcasters, and I do professional comedy. There's no hope for any of us. Lauren does professional comedy now and again. There's no hope for people. As an actress, do you feel supported by anyone?
Fuck no. No.
I've known her 20 years.
No.
At this point, we're just holding on so that, listen, please, pay me on Patreon so that I know someone loves me.
So, Daniel, I think what the point you're trying to say is that, like, the brothers had their own beef and not to use their kind of using the kids and manipulating the kids to square away their beef. But I also think that Rick Moranis does, his heart is in a good place. He's wanting an outlet for his daughter, who's genuinely talented, outlet for all these kids to do something they want to do and that they enjoy. So I think it's the start is bad, but the overall intent was good for him.
It's good that he's supportive of the kids, and he's much better at it than Ed O'Neill is. But then again, Ed O'Neill's great at playing a bullying figure.
And I think that's his arc. He ends up being more like Rick Moranis at the end, right? And I would say to, you know, her point, I think that the movie is trying to correct these parents, right? And maybe it's for the best that it's focusing on the parents, because if it focused on the kids, the coaches have to be monsters, right? Like, that sets up the characters more. I don't know. Well, let's get into this. So the cold open of the movie is them as kids, right?
Yep.
And then it cuts immediately to Ed O'Neill running the combine, right? These kids are running, they're catching, they're throwing. Most of the kids are garbage, and that's the game.
What was that one bit, though? You were talking about the coaches not being monsters, where the gas man, that, what's that kid's name? You know, the token fat kid?
Oh, the farter?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's trying to do
he
that.
He was in
dash.
The Mighty Ducks, wasn't he?
I don't think so.
No, it was another fat kid.
There's two fat kids, but
dude,
one.
Dude, the Mighty Ducks fat kid broke into a house?
I've seen that mugshot.
He's got he's got like
meth.
A Bin Laden beard, and he's so skinny.
Addicted to meth.
Meth is a hell of a drug.
No,
yeah.
I'm kidding.
Well, hopefully he gets the help he needs.
Yeah, prison. at this point,
can you get meth in prison?
I don't know, man. Have you been?
No, not except that we had that Boy Scout trip there once.
To prison?
God.
Did you guess R.I.P.D. the Boy Scouts.
Did you score meth on this trip?
Were you on Scout
Straight,
Matt?
Wait, which prison
Matt?
Trip did you go
was
to?
It was with the women's prison,
was
I think.
Was it an overnight?
No.
I can get you in prison overnight, and Matt, just let me know.
I would pay money to see that. Anyway.
All right. Oh, my God. Daniel directed, like, women in prison drama involving the boys. Oh, hell. We can talk about that off mic. Hey.
All right. Well, that whole thing, though, with the token fat kid who's trying to do the dash, and he runs. There's that one kid who's a lot faster, and then when he's, like, going... How to do, coach? And Ed O'Neill just looks down at him and goes, "What do I look like? A sundial?"
No, he goes,
"Fuck you, asshole!"
Oh, please, come on! That's the best joke of that scene. Well, because the kid goes, he goes, "Oh, that's like 15 seconds or whatever." He goes, and he goes, "How would I do, coach?" He goes, "Kid, this doesn't have a sundial." I laugh.
No, kid,
I
would,
laugh at fat kid.
Well,
trauma.
A kid probably wouldn't get it, so it's not like he's hurting him.
I like the kid running with the arms.
Oh yeah, the kid who's pumping. Oh, he's doing it, man.
It's fantastic.
And okay, and I guess the punchline of all this is Becky. Now,
right.
The, for those of you who don't deal with children, as a middle school girl, she's like 6 inches taller than any of the other guys. And she's, you know, I guess if this was the 80s, she'd be a tomboy. The thing about it is, as a more advanced girl, she's already interested in some of the guys. She doesn't know how to deal with it. She's a complex character, and... Lauren, I guess you can fill this out, but it's all in her eyes, because she knows that these are children, and then there's Devon Sawa, who's a boy, that she's interested in. She's physically developing, and she's a beast, and she doesn't know what to do about it.
She's Tina Belcher, but she likes hitting people.
That's actually a good comparison, because she is coming into her own, and since it's like a Fox Kids movie, she can't talk about it. No, it is.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
can't talk about it. But she's having hormones, she's interested in guys, she wants to still be that kid who's the big kid who's tough. She's
and she doesn't
most...
have a mom that she can talk to about this.
Yeah.
She wins the movie. She's the best.
Yeah, she sees that boy in the grocery store and she's like, Icebox doesn't like boys. She's like horrified.
That's what it's like, man. Like, she's doing a good job at playing a character who's conflicted in a movie that doesn't deserve a character this good. She's a good feminist character.
See, why wasn't the movie about her specifically?
Because she's not a good actress.
Well, you know what? That was, you can cast whoever you need for the character. I mean, it's not like they wrote that character for this actress to play.
I would argue if only... Let's say similar time period, similar age. It's Nina Totenberg, right?
I have no idea who that is.
She was the one who was in Harriet the Spy. Or sorry, Michelle Trachtenberg. Excuse me, Michelle Trachtenberg. She was also the girl with the cast in Pete and Pete.
Ew, Dawn?
She was Dawn.
Boo.
But she is a better actress.
Yes, she is.
But that's who it could be, where she's kind of interested in guys, but she's not sure, because then it's her coming-of-age movie. This is... an ensemble movie.
I still think of her from that all-time cinematic great Eurotrip.
Where she almost shows her boobers.
Mix out with her brother. So I think we've all been there.
Oh,
she,
my.
So I do think she, you know, it's good feminist character. But what also I took to heart to this and what made me think is that this could also be relevant today. Because we are making strides, but even females... You know, now when they try to be part of a football or do sports that, you know, things that mainly males do, still get crap for it. Even the Super Bowl that just happened, you guys, that was the first female coach that's ever been in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And she got a lot of shit.
Was the assistant. And she got a lot of shit for that. and she was an assistant coach, and she still got a lot of flack. So even just now in 2020, it's still relevant, I think, and still an issue.
Yeah. When I was, again, my brother, who was much better at baseball than me, there was a friend of his on several of his teams, Michael, and he had a sister who, I mean, I was, what, 4 years older than her, so I babysat her a couple times. I won't give her full name. She played baseball for a long time. She even made several boys all-star teams. She was bullied significantly and dropped out. And it's just one of these things. Like, we almost had a woman pitching in the MLB, and she got a bunch of threats from even a Republican governor. Like, it's just, it's rough. And this movie is, God, from 1994. This is a 16-year-old movie, and it's more progressive than a lot of the sport politics.
26.
I could almost add. I have a PhD,
it's
and
worse
I can
than
almost.
You think.
Add.
It's 26 years ago.
No, that just shows Christ. How old we're getting. Or it's like, oh yeah, 1994 was 6 years ago.
We were discussing how long ago the 60s was, and it took me a long time to do that math.
Well, it was 30 years ago it ended, obviously.
And I'm still president, baby. I can play the saxophone. But yeah, no, I appreciate the gender-forward politics of this movie because, hell, man, I have a daughter. I want her to figure she can play sports if she wants to. And, like, the asshole thing about it all is some of these kids don't really want to play sports, but their parents want them to. The saddest fucking thing in this whole movie is there's this one kid whose dad is just never there. And he catches the medium range pass, and the whole touchdown comes because he's running towards his dad.
Oh, yeah, that whole bit.
I have a cold, if you couldn't tell, and I'm out of my mind on cold medicine. There I am crying like a child on the couch. I'm like, he's just going to his dad. I'm just like, hold it together, man. Moranis is still around. These kids are in their 30s. These kids are older than you are.
For sure.
What did you think of the scene where the whole setup is Ed O'Neill cuts a bunch of kids from the team, and so Rick Moranis forms his own team? And then what did you think of the bit where they're introducing the team and with all those random nicknames?
It's stupid, but that is a scene specifically for parents, I will say, if only because I played Little League everything. And upstairs in my box of memory crap, next to yearbooks that I can't share with people because of weird things people wrote in them.
I'm sorry I drew that dick, okay?
Right. And it's weird because I didn't even know you in high school. You didn't.
I just randomly drove down here that specifically to draw a dick in your yearbook.
That penis you drew in Grapes of Wrath is weird because you're like, here are the grapes and here's the wrath. And then that penis is just, it's just wrath.
There was a lot of wrath in that drawing. I ate a lot of wrath.
Now you broke me. I don't even remember where I was going.
Oh, I was talking about the scene where they're introducing
You have your yearbooks and your trophies.
Oh,
and
I mean,
it was for the parents.
The whole thing was I have a Little League scorecard, like I had a baseball card where, like, my batting average was .326, but it was all underhand little kids, so it doesn't really matter. Like, I was a mediocre at best player, but they do that for kids. That's why I say it's for the parents, because, yeah, I know they make fun of millennials for having, like, participation trophies, man, which is a stupid fucking thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because guess what? The millennials weren't the ones handing themselves participation trophies. The parents were the ones handing them to them.
I think that was just a 90s sports thing, too, because on my kids' soccer team, I did baseball and soccer, the whole thing is you got your nickname.
And
it was a big deal, and when they present your trophy, and the nickname was a big thing. I don't know if it's because maybe our coach couldn't remember our names. I don't know.
But, I mean, like, for me, it was the same thing. It was like, I guess the advent of Excel spreadsheets were like, we're going to keep your stats for you because he doesn't have anything to do, and she's at every game, so they're going to keep the stats for us. Then I hit my growth spurt, and I couldn't blue anything anymore. Which is why I'm podcasting now.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
But I don't think they can do the nickname thing anymore because too many people got in trouble.
Yeah, hey, tater tits. Yeah, that doesn't work.
Well, I mean,
knick-knack.
Yeah, that's good.
The only thing that was worthwhile about that scene is we found out who played the token fat kid's dad, and it's the guy who stole Pee-wee's bike.
Yeah, in Pee Wee's Big Adventure.
Yep. There's no basement in the Alamo.
Yeah, which is now a cosmic pizza thing or whatever the... what was the Pizzagate thing?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Where that weirdo showed up with a gun to that pizza parlor.
And there was no basement.
And there was no basement.
There was no basement.
There was no sex trafficking ring in a basement because there was no basement.
And this is why you should fact check everything you read on the internet.
Yeah, the weird right-wing YouTube channel stuff with Alex Jones, ignore completely. Yeah, who'd have thunk? Alex Jones was untrustworthy.
I think that the game against the Cowboys was rigged, folks, because those little Giants, they are nowhere near as talented as those Cowboys. There has to be a conspiracy here, and I'm convinced there is something in that water tower that Danny was siphoning off to feed those kids. He was turning them gay.
If anyone was wondering...
Spot on, my friend.
If anyone was wondering why I was poking the bear with some weird off-brand Alex Jones horse shit, it was because I was open, man. I was open.
I got clones out there, folks. They're the off-brand Alex Jones.
PizzaPlanet.com/hashtag.
Alex Jones is just pissed because Ed O'Neill cut him from the team, you know? That's all it is. It's like that fucking Ed O'Neill cut me.
Those old men in the diner laying bets are like an Illuminati.
And that little fat kid that nobody liked was Alex Jones.
And now you know
the rest of the story.
Oh, we haven't even talked about how the professional football players...
Oh my god!
All the cameos. John Madden.
John Madden is in this movie.
John Madden's in this. I love that.
Remember John Madden? Because he doesn't.
Now,
Daniel, I asked you off the air. Didn't they use an actual Madden play?
Yes. The annexation of Puerto Rico.
Is that an actual Madden play from the video game or from an actual?
I know he was a coach back in the day, and right. I think what they said was that that play was based on something he did or during the Super Bowl that he won.
He did. Yeah. And by the by, I will pull this out later for my audience here, but I do own this VHS tape. Yes. And this is not one I found later at Goodwill. This is one that was at my parents' house. I watched this movie until I, you know, practically burned a hole in it.
Oh, yeah.
And the only thing I remembered was, of the whole thing, the last 5 minutes of it. The annexation of Puerto Rico play and... You mean I have to give you the whole dealership? No, you can still work there. Yeah. And then he goes, I have one thing I want, and that's the water tower.
Oh, yeah, because the water tower
has... The O'Shea brothers.
Yeah, hometown of Kevin O'Shea. And I don't get what that means.
It's a Chekhov's gun thing, because he says at the very beginning of the movie, and he goes, one day I'm going to play in the NFL, don't you know? And and his voice is cracking, and he's a tall, handsome man with a Johnny Unitas, like... haircut.
Oh, that's a haircut you can set your watch to.
Bingo. And he goes, at the end, he's going to say Kevin O'Shea. No. It's going to say the O'Shea brothers. And that's, at the end of the day, what Rick Moranis wants. Should we talk about the weird anemic kid that's in this?
Which one? There's several.
No. The one who says, whose mom has the weird...
Oh, yes. Okay, yes.
She has, like, a page boy haircut. And she goes, well... I don't even remember the fucking kid's name.
The TMI about all the problems she had with pregnancy and childbirth. And so instead of overprotective, yeah, she then said, I'm going to make him better by having him play football. Wouldn't it be better maybe have him play tennis?
Wow. Kicking tennis around there,
No, because you know, if you're trying to toughen up a sickly kid rather than going straight to football.
White boy. Here you are just playing white boy sports. No, I was going to say, her as a mom is every lactation group Candace has ever been on.
Oh, yes.
Well, he was only 1 pound, 11 ounces at birth. And so we had to bulk him up. And so we did everything we could. And then halfway through the movie, she turns into like this crazy, like, I mean, not like a, like, like this weird butch character. She's like, yeah! And I'm just like, holy shit. She goes all out. And
like, get him, Mikey, or something.
Yeah.
Mikey, it's just...
Well, there's also that scene where he like shows up covered head to toe in the...
Foam rubber?
Yeah, whatever that was.
I forgot. I remembered one other scene from this movie. He shows up at the... I said auditions. Tryouts.
Yeah, the football auditions.
And he has a snot bubble like a toddler. Another kid pops it. It's a CGI snot bubble. Christ on the cross. My goodness.
Can I go ahead and claim CGI snot bubble as my future band name?
Your nom de porn?
Yeah, why not?
But just as the little giants are like down and out and they're so, you know, sad and disheartened, all these professional football players come and help them. And the other scene I remembered was the intimidation scene.
Oh, yeah.
The foam?
With the foam from the mouth.
With the antacids.
With the antacids, yeah. Because yeah. The sickly kid already had those antacids. Well, so
it was just vapor lock.
That was one of the things that confused me about this movie, was because they have that big scene where, you know, the kid meets John Madden and then they meet all those who were pretty big players back in the day.
Sure.
And
Emmett Smith.
Yeah, that's one of them. And they're talking about, okay, kids, here's how you play. Here's how you be confident. And it's like, all right, you know what? This is a good scene, because I'm sure those players all experienced that when they were kids, right?
And for those of you listening to this who know football, what's interesting about it is the Cowboys, the enemy team, has a black quarterback and several black players, and Emmitt Smith is a black player who played on the Cowboys.
Right.
And he's helping the other team because it's all about sports, right?
Well,
I don't know. That was done intentionally, because there were a lot of football players they could have gotten. They got a Cowboys player to help the team that was against the Cowboys. I assume, right? Like, cause
probably.
If you're doing it, it's semiotics, right?
Well, here's the thing about that scene I don't get as it relates to the movie, because... They all build up the kid's confidence, which is great. But then they immediately lose it when they realize that Becky isn't going to be playing the game with them, because she's decided to be a cheerleader, like Matt alluded to. So what was the point of that scene?
Because she's the only character in this whole movie that matters. And the reason she chooses to be a cheerleader is because Devon Sawa
Yeah. Well, that's...
Wait, no. She's having a moment.
No, because of a stupid boy. She made the wrong decision.
Because the boy is hitting on a cheerleader. They do a car wash fundraiser to buy uniforms. No, and it's interesting for me because, again, my brother was in traveling sports. And, again, I know Matt was in this too, but traveling sports requires a lot of things. Like... my brother played in some competitive games, because I went to a high school. They're nationally competitive constantly. And because they're nationally competitive constantly, they played at Turner Field, the Braves Stadium. They play all over the place. And so being on varsity means something. And when that means something, you get everything handed to you. Nike sponsors my school.
Oh, yep. There you go.
Yep.
And so the minor team that doesn't get anything, they have to fund themselves.
Yeah.
And in Cobb County, that's happening now where I live, because they've cut school funding so much that they have to get corporate sponsorship. Otherwise, the football team doesn't have uniforms next year, because we have a neighbor. We live in a county where a lot of boomers don't want to pay taxes. So they've cut sport team funding almost to nothing. Walton High School, which is nearest, has no funding. So they had to sign up corporate sponsors to pay for the football team this year, which is what they're talking about now.
It's like that episode of Dario where
that's exactly what it is.
Soda sponsorship.
So one day or another, Wheeler, which is within sight of my house, I just hope that you get that Gushers contract or whatever. Otherwise, the mathletes don't have to go have a bus. So after a vaguely sexual scene with a bunch of teenage boys, the Icebox starts making out with Devon Sawa. So
yeah, that little moment in the touchdown where they're jumping, they're celebrating, and they stop, look at each other in the eyes, hold hands, and then they jump again. Super cute.
Well, that's how 11 and 12-year-old relationships.
That's your childhood crush right there.
So she made the right decision, and she does come back. She plays in the game.
I had that thought at the end because Rick Moranis finds his high school girlfriend.
We have not mentioned her. Yes, you're right.
It's Patty. She's a great character because she's a single mom who wants to support a son.
Who is Devin Sawal? It's Devin Sawal's mom. Mm-hmm.
And they moved to town. And the good thing for me was that Moranis and her had the kiss and not Sawa. Not because I thought that. It's just that so many of these movies, we did Little Rascals a million years ago. That's a vaguely sexual scene with much younger kids. This, Eisbach wants to kiss her, kiss him,
the joke
but
about
she can't, right? Yeah. It's just that first kiss when you're, she's supposed to be probably 11 or 12.
Yeah.
It's weird. And they bravely decide not to do it.
Well, the joke about the Little Rascals was these are kids pretending to be adults based on what they've seen.
And I was in there, and I was selling my kid because he was the best kid I could afford.
Well, I mean, yeah, but
when Donnie showed up, I shat myself. That was something.
When Mel Brooks showed up in that movie, that's when I shat myself.
It's to be fair, Daniel had a joke in that episode. I was so shocked. None of us responded to it. I think Kelsey was on that episode.
What was the joke?
For when we did Little Rascals?
Yeah.
I don't even remember. You just had a joke, and I was just like, it's the president. I don't have a word to say.
The best kid money can buy.
Oh,
the
right.
The best kid money could buy. He was buying kids. Buying children.
Well, that's how Eric exists, but anyway.
No, I love that. Find him at a flea market somewhere? He finally gets the girl. He...
Well,
I want you to say that again.
Rick Moranis gets the girl. Nerds, there's hope for all of us.
There's hope.
And you don't have to rape them in a Darth Vader mask like in Revenge of the Nerds.
Well, I mean, you're right.
We can't do that movie, man.
No, we can't.
We can't. I was that nerd at one point. I didn't rape anyone.
I was about to say.
I was going to say, I clarified before Daniel could interrupt.
I just want to say that... her presence in the movie reminded me just how short Rick Moranis is.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And you know what? Credit where credit's due. They didn't put him on an apple crate.
Yeah.
He could be short. He's shorter than his wife in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, too. You know what? Short dudes, I get it. I understand you. I'm 6'5". I don't get it. Lauren, I love you to death. Your husband's as tall as I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I'm 5 feet. On a good day.
Ish. We're fine.
All right. So the whole three-act structure goes about how you expect. First act, they form the team. Second act, the team practices. They don't think that they can get it. We haven't really talked about Spike yet. We need to talk about him.
All right. So Spike is, God, he is the guy who yells nerds in Revenge of the Nerds.
Basically. Well, I think Matt was talking about.
Yeah, I mentioned, I think, toward the beginning of the podcast, these are small-town football Nazis, especially the dad. Talking about he's basically brainwashed his son from birth to become a football-killing machine.
Yes, and he says that, too. Though, I believe the dad kind of looked like the drill sergeant in Starship Troopers, even though I know it's not him, but think that sort of character.
Yeah, and to the movie's credit, he's set up as a bad character. Because, again, I want to remind you, Ed O'Neill as the again, local boy who made good, wants to be... I mean, he's not an honest guy, but he is someone who pretends to work for everything. He made the football team, he fought for the football team, he... made the winning point. He got the Heisman. He did all these things. And now he owns the car dealership and sells stuff. He's a worker.
That's the whole thing about that character, though, is he doesn't realize how kitsch he is.
Well, yes, but the point is that he works, right? I mean, I mean, the discussion we're having is... it's all rural Ohio and how you get out of it. It's the Colbert joke. One of my favorite Colbert routines ever was in the Colbert Report. He had John Glenn on, and he goes, So there's more astronauts from Ohio than any other state. What is it about your home state that makes people want to leave the surface of the earth?
I mean, have you been to Ohio?
I for 4 years, I lived there. And the thing about it is, that's what it is. How do you get out? These people are charismatic on top, and so they lose their humanity. And this movie is about regaining their humanity, right?
Because because Spike's dad and to a lesser degree Kevin's sycophant butts are the only really bad people in this movie.
It's interesting the semiotics of giving him a military haircut, which makes him someone who follows orders and makes him an asshole.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Spike is this kid that both of them are trying to recruit without ever thinking about just how screwed up that situation with Spike and his dad is, but...
Well, and credit to Rick Moranis and that stuff, which is that Spike ends up on the loser team, the Little Giants, and...
At first, because Rick Moranis lies about who he is.
This is football hell.
And his go-kart.
Spike's in hell. Spike's in peewee football hell.
Spike, I shouldn't laugh at Spike because that thing is just horrifying, but... Spike speaking in third person all the time.
It creeped me out.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah, the weird lobotomy kid is a weird touch. He is the horror element to this. He's like, Frankenstein, but skill.
And he's got a gold tooth. He's like a 12-year-old boy with a gold tooth.
Right. He does?
Yes.
He does.
He has a gold tooth.
In the third act, he's halfway to Jaws in like a Bond movie. And... it just settles you, not just because of the Jaws tooth, but because he has to kill people, and he's like 6 inches taller than anyone.
Oh, well, that's also a thing about the final game where he's like literally trampling over that kid so that there's that like cartoonish indent in the field. I'm pretty sure that's a penalty.
Also...
And it takes like 20 of them to pull him down.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is... By the way, episode like... 5 or 6 of this podcast was Space Jam. This is as cartoonish as Space Jam, but with human beings. Watch this before Space Jam, because Space Jam is a nightmare.
Is it true they're going to remake Space Jam? I heard that somewhere.
They're making a sequel.
Is that true? Or a sequel?
Well,
a sequel?
At one point, 15 years ago, I broke open a fortune cookie and it said that. And now, if you align your zodiac, it might happen.
Anything somewhat... successful in the 90s, they are rebooting.
Well, that's right.
Yep.
That's
anything.
Why Richie Rich is getting a reboot.
It is?
It's already on Netflix, buddy.
Oh, fuck.
Like
me.
Anything that was remotely successful.
Yeah. It's now weird.
Rebooting.
Home Alone 9. The new batch.
Why not?
Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, well, they're all adults now.
Coming now, yeah.
You know who's not going to be in that?
Honey, I Shot the Kids, we've already talked about.
Well, you know who's not going to be in Saved by the Bell?
Lisa. Do you know why?
She got braces.
Did she become a stripper too? Why aren't they inviting her back?
She
found
Jesus twice.
Something like that. Yeah. She's been kind of out there for a while.
All right. Anyway.
Screech coming back?
Well, he's in jail, isn't he?
He was at one point. He did porn.
Well, the way Dustin Diamond seems to hate everyone.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I doubt they'd ever want him back.
You saw it? Did you really? How was it?
I don't know. I think Roger would have given a thumbs down.
Yeah, so I mean, Spike speaks in third person. He sounds like he's a lobotomy patient. His father is football Nazi. The only person in this game who could take him is Becky, and she's not playing for the first part, so he's just killing everyone.
Well, they get 3 touchdowns immediately, and... then, brace yourselves, the losers come back.
Well, that's a weird thing about the final game, which is the entire third act, right?
Right.
And that first half goes by real quickly, although there is one amusing moment where the asthmatic kid has the ball, and he's like running in circles, yelling at the ref, blow the whistle, blow the whistle. That was fairly amusing, but it felt like it didn't establish enough, like, just... how everyone plays. What I mean is, you said the underdogs come back, but what we see in that first half, if the only way that the second half would work is if the Cowboys choke worse than the Atlanta Falcons.
Ew, ha!
It's just pure luck, a lot of it, right? Like we're saying, like
it seems
like
to
you're
be.
Saying, the dad comes, so he runs.
Well, and
a lot of it's luck, and they couldn't make that happen again.
I will give this movie 2 points. First, we talked about Mighty Ducks, and if you're a Patreon subscriber, I guess you could hear us talking about those two movies. One had I think Shay on it. One had Emily on it, but they're behind the paywall now. But I only bring that up because those movies had illegal plays on it.
Oh yeah,
you can't block like the flying V at the end. You can't actually block the puck. That in hockey that would be called a penalty immediately. In this, they had a football person on staff, so all the plays are mostly legal. Wow, I said almost legal, like it's a porno. I'll try that again. These plays are pretty much legal, but there's photo editing. Okay. With that in mind, there's some weird shit at the end, including a play called The Annexation of Puerto Rico, which we're about to get to, because it's the entire onus for the finale, which was established by one John Madden. And if you were a kid in 1994, you owned a device called the Nintendo 64.
Not 1994.
Yes, but if you were a kid then, you owned an N64.
Yes.
And John Madden is a hero of obesity and also football.
I know he retired a while ago. I thought he passed away a number of years ago.
He is still not.
His partner did, Pat Summerall.
Because of alcoholism. And God bless him, I'm working that way. But John, can you tell me a thing or two about football? Well, I can. I was a Super Bowl coach.
I think it goes full circle because the Annexation of Puerto Rico play is based on something Madden did, I think, and then they played the Annexation of Puerto Rico play in a real football game after this movie was made.
In fact, if you notice well into what he's doing, he's typing it into a video game console playing Madden.
We need to do The Replacements at some point. That is the best John Madden movie performance right there.
My favorite thing about The Replacements is, of all things, I watched the commentary. Do you know the cast of The Replacements?
Besides Keanu?
Yeah.
There's Orlando Jones is in it. John Favreau, I think, was in it.
Yep.
Gene Hackman is the coach.
As Daniel alluded to, the whole joke of the commentary of The Replacement is Orlando Jones goes, so we were going to do the commentary with someone else, but everyone else is more expensive than me, Orlando Jones, so I'm going to guide you through all of this. Yeah, that's a stay tuned and a half.
I loved that movie.
So, you two, you want to give us into the third act?
No, I think we talked about it, that the underdog wins, you know, in the end. Good triumphs evil. Icebox and Junior have their little moment, and Rick Moranis gets the girl, and Danny, who is Rick Moranis' character, gets what he finally wants, which is acknowledgement from his brother, and the water tower says, hometown of the O'Shea brothers.
And credit where credit's due across this whole movie. And they ride into the sunset. Movie. There's nothing sexual with the kids.
Yeah.
And no, I mean that. Like, because even in the Mighty Ducks movies, it's just like, she's my sister, bro. And like, she wants to make out with Josh Jackson.
Yeah, but aren't the Mighty, I thought the Mighty Ducks kids were older.
They're the same age at first.
At
man.
First, they are. They're the same age, but in the.
And because there's nothing that Michael Eisner likes more than horny kids, I guess. But it's Josh Jackson, right? Joshua Jackson.
Yeah, Joshua Jackson.
And he's just looking at that one girl the whole time. And Emilio Estevez tries to flirt, but he's also like 12, I think. But like, at the end of the day, like, they go in for that kiss, and they don't have the kiss, and they just hold hands and like kind of jump around. Which, again, that's kind of what middle school dating was.
Yeah.
And they're middle school dating. And
that was a great moment when, like Lauren said, that scene where they're just jumping up and down, then they pause and they resume jumping up and down.
Because, again, if this was a lesser movie, like we did Little Rascals, they would have kissed.
Oh, yeah.
And then Donald Trump would have also kissed.
Without consent.
Without consent.
I mean, you're not wrong. Little Rascals is a worse movie than Little Giants.
And you know what the brother does? He accepts defeat, right? Like, there's not some weird, like, their flags being called. And again, I brought this up with Daniel before, but when the asshole dad says to make, like, a bad hit on Junior, who's the quarterback played by Daniel Sawa, Ed O'Neill grabs him. He goes, if you make another play like that,
you're both out of here.
You're both out of here. They're trying to play it clean because you want to win cleanly. And guess what? They lost. So he took it like, I was almost said, like, take it like a man. That's the point of this is that it's not like a man. You take it like a person. You win correctly. This movie is very progressive for 1994, which sucks to say because we're in 2020 and a lot
probably,
of movies.
Yeah, it probably doesn't look so progressive now.
But at the end of the day, this is a pretty, for a movie from 1994, the girl who is the dominant character allows to be strong, but doesn't make her masculine. She's allowed to hit on boys.
We didn't even mention that scene where Rick Moranis catches her trying on makeup, and she has to say, no, that's not lipstick, it's a cherry Tootsie Pop.
Yeah, she has a scene where she goes full 90s precocious kid, like railing at her dad about their mom who's gone, which...
Oh, that happened, yeah, all
which
the time.
Seems totally out of character for the rest of the movie. She doesn't seem to think that way.
I will disagree with you only because it proves that she is an independent person and there's no repercussion. Middle school, high school people, they lash out against their parents and he treats her... I mean, frankly, she's a good actress in that moment, but he's a good dad, which we don't give credit for in this movie. He listens to her and allows her to be that way. Guess what teenage and high school kids do? They rebel against their parents. I don't know, man. Like, the thing is, tragically, I'm a man in this case, and my maturity hit later. She's, right? Like, that's her character, and he wants her to be younger, and he's dealing with younger boys. And she's the one girl who's mature enough to have an emotion here. This movie is much more self-aware than we let it on to be because I haven't seen it in fucking almost 30 years. It's very, very good at that. It's very good at being a parent. And Rick Moranis actually deals with it like an adult would. And frankly, Ed Harris.
That would have been an interesting casting.
I'm going to send these kids into space and get them back. But no, Ed O'Neill does a very good job too because he deals with these emotional kids. But the more emotional people is the parents and he shoves them away, which is frankly remarkable. This movie is very progressive. Considering we're in an era where if your kids aren't good at, like, say, volleyball, by seventh grade, they're not going to be worth anything, which is ridiculous because I'm at a competitive high school and the girls who play volleyball are good at that age. The guys who play golf, I have a kid who's about to play on the amateur PGA tour. He's 17.
Oh, nice.
He sent me pictures from a tournament in Augusta that he's playing now. He's 17.
What the hell am I doing with my life?
I'm drinking. But I mean, like, this is good for them. They're good people.
Before, I think before your voice gives out, Nick, we should go around and do final
thoughts.
What do you think, man?
No, I'm last. Lauren?
No, I loved it. Just totally brought back the nostalgia. I love Rick Moranis and O'Neill characters. The kids were cute. There were some cute moments that I just remembered. And Devon Sawa. And not as good as Mighty Ducks. Not as bad as... The Big Green. Fair enough.
I didn't really expect to like this movie. I'm not really into kids' sports movies in general, but this had a lot of laugh out loud moments and very well done characters for a kids' movie. So if you're into kids' sports movies, I think you should see it.
I've kind of changed my mind a little bit in the course of the conversation in that when I ended watching it for this, I thought it was creepy because it reminded me of that documentary. I still think the movie would have been a lot better if the perspective was on the kids instead of the adults. And I'm going to stand by that. But I can think of a lot worse, and I think we've mentioned a couple that are a lot worse. So if this is the sort of thing you're into, go for it.
I'll give Daniel one thing immediately. It's also 90 minutes. Like, on the nose. That helps. At the end of the day, though, I will debate, argue with Daniel for one thing. This is different because of those things. 1,000 of the movies we've done that are sport kids movies, everything from Space Jam to the two Mighty Ducks movies, are too kid forward. Not that saying that's bad. This is just different. And in a melange of kid movies involving sports, it's nice to have something that's not that. It also allows it to be more complex. If you're a kid watching this, you're interested in the kids. As a parent now, my daughter's not going to be a competitive anything because I'm me. Also, if you can imagine me, imagine a 6'5" lowercase letter D. I'm all pudgy in the middle. Also, if you use Comic Sans, I'm almost funny. But with that in mind, God bless her. If she wants to be competitive, she can be competitive. But that's not the point of any of this. I just want to be someone. When I was playing at baseball, Perry Parnum, my dad, it was 1996, he walked in the opening ceremonies of the 1996 Olympics. And he was wearing that blazer. It was like a windbreaker with zippers because it was 1996. It was also turquoise. And some asshole playing baseball goes, "Hey, kid, why don't you just go back to the Olympics?" Adults who support kids who play these aggressive sports are exclusively assholes. It's nice to have one where everyone learns a fucking lesson. Because guess what? I'm in the Deep South. Some of you even went to University of Georgia. I bet all those kids grew up to be normal human beings. You're playing sports.
Oh boy. Point taken.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Learn a lesson from everything, man. And in that vein, we remind you of nostalgia. We have a Patreon that will, then you can pay us to remind you of nostalgia. So stay tuned next week and every future week where you pay me to remind you of something that you should have forgotten. I'm like a psychiatrist, but without the heroin. Nah. So stay tuned next week and every future week, and we put a piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Life Within Your Childhood is a product of Blue Letter Podcast. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced by Nick Hoffman, Daniel Sutter, and Matthew Quinn, and edited by Daniel Sutter. Our theme song is Surf Skinning by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com. License under Creative Commons License by Attribution 3.0 License.